This is Mae Bressel. It is side two of tape number 860, May the 30th, 1988. Now, I wrote my first published article about Nixon being the selected heir to the presidency and his long role with the mafia and Mayhew and Howard Hughes and so forth. And in The Manchurian Candidate, the team of people that are brainwashed have to watch a demonstration where they sit in a row of chairs, and one person is selected to choke the person he likes the best and then shoot another one in the head. And the men who are selected as the victims just sit there, and they don't have any response to their own murder. They're already zonked out so that they can be used for various operations and then wiped out, and they can't fight their murderer. And then in the course of the movie, a newspaper man from the New York Times is murdered, and it turns out that he's writing exposés of the selected candidate who would be president of the United States. And then the brain-controlled candidate, the Manchurian candidate, for the job of helping eliminate people until they get their chosen president, he kills his own girlfriend and he kills her father, who was an opponent of the selected candidate. So along the way, they are working their way up until the very worst person, who has had the political ambitions all along, will necessarily become the president, because those who interfere with the activities on the outside can be eliminated. Now, in 1960, while Sinatra was close to John Kennedy, he was raising money for his presidency, and he was getting money in New Jersey, putting on shows, and in Nevada and other places, there were reports that John Kennedy was going to dump Sinatra and his friendship, and Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy's father, Joe Kennedy, felt with the political advisors that they should sack Sinatra, that he was too linked to the organized crime. And Sinatra's political romance with Kennedy began to end. He went to the inauguration, put on the inauguration ball, but the feelings towards John Kennedy were being severed just even before Kennedy was inaugurated. And Sinatra was very upset by this, and they were cutting him down because of his reputation with Giacana and the mafia. And Sinatra was close to Peter Lawford. Lawford was married to John Kennedy's sister. In this one book, Evan Sinatra, it tells about Dorothy Kilgallen, who was notoriously anti-Sinatra. And it gave me a different view of why Dorothy Kilgallen died right after she saw Jack Ruby, because she may have had some information from Ruby about those very people that surrounded Jack Kennedy and literally got away with it. And so, again, the newspaper person has to be gunned down. The media person is gunned down. So the legend that Sinatra was embarrassing the Kennedys was beginning in the 60s. And in 1960, Sinatra was making a movie with Janet Leigh. And in 62, 2 years later, she becomes one of the stars of Manchurian Candidate. And according to accounts I have, the menace of Bobby Kennedy as the Attorney General was always before him, the crusading Kennedy, all-powerful, ruthless, unstoppable. And as soon as he was sworn in as Attorney General, he was determined to get the mobsters out of Vegas, to run the mafia out of the country. And Kennedy wrote a book against the mafia called The Enemy Within, and about the mafia, and he was crusading. So in 1961, when this book was written by Mr. Condon, the Manchurian Candidate, is when all of the friction was taking place between Frank Sinatra and Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy, and the people around Kennedy were suspicious of Sinatra. Now, Sinatra, for all purposes, wanted to get even. That's what I believe he wanted to do. And I believe that a good way to get even with him would be to fix Bobby Kennedy up with Marilyn Monroe and then have Marilyn killed and sacrificed, which, incidentally, I'll do a little bit on the Queen of Diamonds and Queen of Spades. I believe the Queen of Diamonds, a Manchurian Candidate, was Marilyn Monroe. And they were, at the time the movie was made, of course, Marilyn was very much a part of their lives in Hollywood. And then the other part of fixing Judith Exner up with John Kennedy was the perfect vengeance. Now, I don't believe now the story that he just fixed them up to be nice because he liked them. I believe that Sinatra, placed like the movie Manchurian Candidate, was placed in society to unload the two Kennedy brothers. And shortly after Kennedy was in office, he removed the troops from the Bay of Pigs, and of course all the gambling syndicate wanted to get back to Cuba and continue their operations, which Kennedy had interrupted by allowing Fidel Castro to live. So Sinatra was in a key position to bring down both Kennedys with the cunts, I should say. One, Marilyn Monroe with Robert Kennedy, and Judith Exner at the other end, that would be detrimental to their reputations, to their welfare, and then later when they're killed would lead a lot of mystique to what were they doing with these people, how were they fixed up, and of course Sinatra was the kingpin in fixing both of those up. And Sinatra went to Hyannisport September 23rd, 1961. Manchurian Candidate came out about that time, and he saw John Kennedy there. John Kennedy flew into there with Pat Lawford. His brother-in-law, Ted Kennedy, was there. And then he asked to go to Washington, D.C., because he wanted to talk about the mafia connections that Robert Kennedy was attacking them on. And Lawford begged Robert Kennedy to listen for Sinatra's pleas for Sam Giancana, and Robert Kennedy intended to make Frank's mobster friend the Justice Department's top priority in Chicago. This comes from Kitty Kelly's book, His Way, the unauthorized biography of Frank Sinatra, and it tells how Sinatra goes in 1961 to Washington, D.C., with Peter Lawford to say, would you get off our backs, get off of Giancana's back? And Robert Kennedy's priority at that time was to go after Giancana and the Chicago Mafia. And in this book by Kitty Kelly, it goes on to say then, he then told the president, this is Frank, he then told the president about his interest in making the Manchurian Candidate. And that is what I think was the threat to President John Kennedy. If you don't do what I asked you to, I was at Hyannisport, I was at the Justice Department, I'm going to make the movie The Manchurian Candidate, a psychological thriller based on a novel by Richard Condon about two American soldiers who were captured by the communists during the Korean War and brainwashed. One of the soldiers, Lawrence Harvey, is programmed to assassinate a presidential candidate so that the communist-backed candidate will become president. But it could be the other way around, that we are using Navy intelligence, CIA, to put in the fascist Nazi president, and saying that the Koreans are doing the mind control when we had all the mind control programs going full speed by 1947 and certainly by 50, 61, 62, and so forth. So Frank Sinatra said that he was going to play a part in the movie, be played by him, and the other soldier, Frank Sinatra's role, is deprogrammed by a psychiatrist, and they work with the FBI to investigate Harvey. Frank explained what he was going to do, that he was going to make the movie, and he approached with the property of George Axelrod and John Frankenheimer, who were going to make the film, and it would be distributed by United Artists as part of a $15 million contract Frank had with the company. The problem was that Arthur Krim, president of United Artists, refused to distribute the movie. He was finance chairman of the Democratic Party at the time. He was protective of the Kennedy family. He felt the movie was too politically explosive, and Frank disagreed with them and took the matter himself to John Kennedy. So he got permission. He said, I'm going to make a movie on how a president is killed, and by making it be that the Koreans brainwashed somebody for Moscow, for the Pavlov Institute, instead of that the CIA and Navy intelligence brainwashed various people for the murder of our own president. I feel it was a veiled threat, just as Sinatra, if the allegations are true, or his friends had arranged for the head in the bed of Mr. Harry Cohn, and he got the part that he did very well in From Here to Eternity. I feel that this was a threat that followed his close associations with this particular hatred of the Kennedys and the Justice Department. And I feel that this threat was to say to John Kennedy, I've had it up to here, I'm going to make the movie. And the movie came out in 1963, the same year as the assassination. Now, Frank had a close relationship with Joe DiMaggio, who's married to Marilyn Monroe. It was after Marilyn divorced DiMaggio that she moved into Frank Sinatra's home, and then they introduced her to Robert Kennedy, and that part is fairly good history. But DiMaggio and Sinatra had wanted to break into Marilyn's apartment. DiMaggio was mad about the divorce, and they heard that Marilyn had a lesbian affair, and they were going to break down the door It was known as the Wrong Door Raid, and finally with a lesbian, then DiMaggio could criticize her and save his masculinity by saying, she doesn't like me, Mr. Macho, Matt DiMaggio, see, because she's with a lesbian. Well, it turned out she wasn't with a lesbian, and they tore down the door of the wrong woman in an apartment, and they were sued and went to court, and one of the attorneys for these guys was Sidney Korshak, who also is a well-known attorney for the Mafia, and represents Frank Sinatra frequently. But the interesting part of this story in Kitty Kelly's book says Frank hired Fred Otash, O-T-A-S-H, a private detective, to try and prove that he did not perjure himself in the state Senate committee when they were investigating it. By the time the grand jury convened, Frank and his friends had their previously divergent stories straightened out. He testified for 15 minutes, sticking to the story he gave one party, the state Senate committee, and he escaped indictment and perjury, and he was able to get off this charge of the allegations or the defending of himself that would prove he was involved in knocking the door down. And then this book says DiMaggio and Monroe had been divorced several months. Frank Sinatra started dating Marilyn Monroe, passed her around to her friends. Joe DiMaggio never forgave Frank Sinatra or Peter Lawford for allowing Marilyn Monroe's affair with Robert Kennedy to take place. He was bitter about them, and after her suicide, in quotes, he forbid them from attending her funeral in 1962. And also, Sinatra was forbidden from attending the funeral of John Kennedy in 1963. Now, that investigator, Fred Otash, worked protecting or looking into information for Frank Sinatra, going back to that other time period where Sinatra is setting her up with Robert Kennedy. And then in the book Goddess by Anthony Summers, published by Macmillan in 1985, this book goes into great length about the murder of Marilyn Monroe and her relationship with the Kennedys and Peter Lawford. And I'm not going into the bulk of this book now. I never have touched on the programs. But in this book, they suggest that somebody put her in an ambulance and she started to go to the hospital, but she was dead. And so the circumstances were such that they brought her back to the house. And Anthony Summers said that now time was needed above all to allow Robert Kennedy to slip out of town, that he was there with her when this was going on, when the body was returned to Brentwood. It was time for a clean-up operation of Marilyn's house. Only when all this had been accomplished did they call out to Dr. Greenson, her psychiatrist, who came to discover the body between 3:30 and 4. As the trail followed by reporters, Himes and Woodfield indicates, as the trail followed, and as described by Peter Lawford to his third wife, the Attorney General, Robert Kennedy, left for Northern California. He was supposed to go back to Gilroy, nearby Carmel, by air. Meanwhile, as he told Gould, Peter Lawford destroyed some compromising documents, probably a half-written letter, rather than a suicide note, and commissioned private detective Fred Otash to sweep dust over whatever telltale tracks would remain in Marilyn's bedroom. In any event, Otash and associates were able to do very little. By the time they were activated early on Sunday, some more powerful wheels had been set into motion. The reason I share this with you is that the private investigator that Frank Sinatra used for his various mischief and to get him out of court problems was this Mr. Otash, and it's the identical person who was called, Sinatra's investigator is called by somebody to Peter Lawford in this case to clean out Marilyn's place and sanitize it before the people come that could pick up some more clues about how she died or phone calls or letters or whatever. So Marilyn had that in Marilyn's death had that in common with the early Sinatra investigator and then with Peter Lawford, who had connected her to the Kennedys. And this book suggests, Goddess suggests, that Robert Kennedy was in town. And also Kitty Kelly's book, His Way, the unauthorized biography of Frank Sinatra, goes into some emotional problems that Sinatra had at one time. And I'm not sure how much he was under mind control. When you see Sinatra now, to me he's a walking version of a possible Candy Jones. And one reason I got interested in Manchurian Candidate, I would have seen it anyway coming out in the subject matter, but when I saw him in Larry King's, I think I mentioned on the tape, I really thought something was drastically wrong. Larry King asked him about his releasing this movie at this time, and the subject of the movie suddenly didn't come up at all. And Frank Sinatra just looked dazed and said, well, I taped it off the air, but just to paraphrase it, like, I don't know I had it. I didn't know how I owned it. My business people buy these things. And there was no comment about his former friend John Kennedy or Robert Kennedy or Marilyn Monroe or the dying Judith Exner. All those people are just a blur. If Sinatra wouldn't, of course, mention their name, Giancana Roselli. All the people dead around these people. And Sinatra looked very much like he was under mind control. And in Kitty Kelly's book, she says on page 28, Sinatra is having problems, a relationship, their friendship, his friendship with one particular person was going to end unless he promised to get psychiatric care. So Frank agreed, and upon his return to Los Angeles, he began to see Dr. Harry Romney Greenson. Now, this was the psychiatrist for Frank Sinatra, and this is also the very controversial psychiatrist later for Marilyn Monroe. For the day she died, she allegedly had needle marks in her arm. She'd gone to see Greenson, and this was Marilyn Monroe's psychiatrist also. And according to this book, he's the brother-in-law of Milton Rudin, the attorney for Frank Sinatra. And Greenson, I always have these amazing neighbors that live next to me. They never end. But Dr. Greenson lived down on Walden Drive, the same block as my parents, about 5-6 houses down. And his son went to private school where my son went. And then all of a sudden, when I'm studying this history, I see this is Marilyn's, I call it the fatal psychiatrist, and he was Frank Sinatra's psychiatrist. So Frank had a control, a Manchurian candidate control with this investigator, Otesh, who also sanitized when Marilyn was dead, with a psychiatrist, who was his psychiatrist, who Marilyn went to. And it just seems that these people traveled not only in the same circle, but they had some relationship that we don't haven't really outlined yet clearly enough to know where the connections are between these people and how much these were Manchurian candidate murders, all for the purpose, one, of discrediting Robert Kennedy, who would be murdered in 1968, who wanted to be president, and one for murdering John Kennedy in 1963. And embarrassing the family with the various people that the boys had been fixed up. Sure, they walked into the trap, but it's pretty bad. In this book, Goddess, it tells how Greenson tried to talk to Marilyn, and she was teetering and having problems with drugs and despair. And she called Robert Kennedy, and she was frantic, and called Peter Lawford, and couldn't get Kennedy to come to her place. And Marilyn was traveling psychically between, or psychologically between, Greenson and Kennedy and Peter Lawford, and all of these people only came into being actually through Frank Sinatra, the investigators, and so forth. So the web of these people would be just about as clearly defined as anything you could see in the way they connect to each other, erase each other, and compare it to the movie The Manchurian Candidate. Now, in a book on Frank Sinatra, several books that I've been reading, it tells about the relationship of Jackie Onassis with Frank Sinatra. And there's a picture of Jackie Onassis in the book, The Unauthorized Biography of Sinatra, looking very beautiful. And he's escorting her to the inaugural ball in 1960. Remember, Sinatra put on the inaugural ball for the Reagans in 1981. And so it's 1961, and he's taking her to her box for the pre-inauguration gala. It's the night before the inauguration, and he wouldn't have it at the Kennedy Center. He hated the Kennedys so much that he refused to have this entertainment that he was setting up at the Kennedy Center. Now, Jackie looks very happy and very beautiful, and she's on the arm of Frank Sinatra, who was a well-known actor. And certainly by 1961, when they were sworn in January 61, there was a lot of information about the links of Sinatra with Luciana, again, of Navy intelligence, and Mayhew's connections, FBI, CIA, working right with J. Edgar Hoover and those people, with Luciana, not only Luciana, but Trafficanda and John Roselli and Carlos Mocello, the hit teams that they're going to use to wipe out persons that eventually took them all around the world. So here is Jackie Onassis, Jackie Kennedy at the time, very happy in the arms of Frank Sinatra. Now, that's okay going back to 1961. She could have known and gotten better entertainment for the inauguration, I believe, but maybe they were indebted to Sinatra for getting all the votes he did. But when you get one time step further, to September 8, 1975, Jacqueline Onassis has long been a widow, and a lot has happened. The two Kennedy brothers are dead, and Marilyn's dead, and Frank Sinatra wants to make a comeback in New York City. And he wants to go to the Eurus Theater, where he'd make $1 million in 2 weeks. His reputation is sliding. So he signs up for the Eurus Theater for an engagement that turned out to be a triumph for him. It made a lot of money. And in the book Sinatra by Earl Wilson, it said that it grossed in 2 weeks $1,088,000. It was a social success because on Wednesday night, what made it such a success right after it opened was Jacqueline Onassis came to the theater as Sinatra's date for the evening. Now, this is the man that was fixing Judith Exner up with her husband, John Kennedy. And visualize Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis, having married Aristotle Onassis, being the escort of Frank Sinatra in New York City, making him hit again. Wouldn't a woman be angry at a man who fixes her husband up with Sam Giancana? And the House Select Committee began investigations in 1975, just around this time period, where all this stuff about Giancana came out, and John Roselli and Judith Exner, and how Exner would go into the White House, leave her little panties under the pillow, and sleep there for a while, and then go down to Florida and be with mobster Sam Giancana. And all of this is going on. Jacqueline Kennedy, it seems to me, just as a woman, would be very angry, very, very angry, and not be dating socially Frank Sinatra, the man that set up Robert Kennedy with Marilyn Monroe and John Kennedy with Judith Exner. And according to this book, she came to the theater September 17th. Jackie came to the theater as Sinatra's date in the evening. This coup to theater was Jackie Onassis' own idea. It was early in her widowhood, and she had not been seen around town. Poor thing. The night before, Frank had made a supper reservation for the 17th for himself and for Jackie and Peter Duchens. The word was spread, versus Carol's, the man who wrote the book, Earl Wilson, rather, his column about this dinner date, and he said that Jackie would be coming to see his concert. Jackie had the same kind of magic Sinatra had. Rumors flew. A Sinatra intimate had been saying Frank Sinatra and Jackie would be a perfect match, and Sinatra's friend Barbara Marks, who he eventually shortly afterwards married, flew into New York shortly afterwards. Jackie was coming without an escort. She was being picked up by Frank Sinatra's plain-spoken pal, Jilly Rizzo. Now, the character George de Morenschild, with these strong links to Nazis and Nazi intelligence during World War II, who was the mentor, the intelligence person in charge of Lee and Marina Oswald, had been at the home of Jacqueline Bouvier when she was a child, at the home of her parents, the Auchincloss, saw her as a child, and de Morenschild had this contact with Jackie and then played a role in the murder of John Kennedy. And Sinatra had the contact between Robert Kennedy, who was dead, died in 68, this is 75, and John Kennedy. And the question is, why would she so willingly socialize or want to make Sinatra a hit? And she's picked up by, I don't know if Jilly Rizzo is one of his mafia gangsters or who he is, but that's the guy that picked up Jacqueline and took her to the theater. And according to this book, there was a mob scene, a carnival atmosphere at the Eurus Theater. And wearing a simple black pants outfit, Jackie sat in the fourth row with Peter Duchin and his wife, and she and Duchin joined a standing ovation and returned to Sinatra's dressing room after the concert, with Sinatra's right hand encircling Jackie's left wrist and Jilly Rizzo shoulder to shoulder with him. On the other side, they went off to Club 21. And there's a picture in the book My Way, Kitty Kelly's book, Jacqueline Onassis with her arm, Sinatra's arm around her, going to Club 21 after she leaves his concert. And there's a picture of his friend Jilly Rizzo, the driver. And then that wasn't enough that they went to 21, but Jackie decided that they should go out at midnight to the Rainbow Grill of the RCA building, 65 floors up, and they went to a show there, and they were very visible in town. And it's sort of like saying, I approve of what you did. And the question was, I'm going to ask the hard question, were all these people used to make the two Kennedy brothers expendable? Now, Jacqueline Kennedy's sister married this Count Radziwill, who was a Polish, allegedly a heir to the throne of Poland when the monarchy were removed. And they were far, far right people. And the question of these widows, widowhood, I go back to the Queen of Spades, which in tarot cards is a widow. And Lee Harvey Oswald is coming home. He's seen this offer, the Queen of Spades by Tchaikovsky, and he's written a section from that aria about that he's going to do something very heroic. And maybe the heroism in this case is to wipe out the leftist, the commie simp kind of people like John Kennedy. After all, didn't he pull back from Cuba and didn't kill Castro and so forth? And there's Lee Harvey Oswald holding the Queen of Spades. Now, one other item about Jacqueline Onassis, the mysterious Onassis. I've referred to her through the years, but not as much as I should have. There was an article July 28th, 1986, about the law office of Simon Rifkin. That office always interests me because he was in charge of the Sterling Bank and a lot of other important connections to David Graver, who worked with Rowell, who set up James Earl Ray and so forth. But in this article, it said Simon Rifkin's son, that's the attorney, and his law partner, Arthur Lyman, was the chief counsel for the investigation of the Iran-Contra affair, who made a whole circus out of that. And the only one he was a tough on was Albert Hakim, because he's a little Iranian Jew. The rest all got off very easy. Rifkin's son is chairman of the Sloan Kettering Institute for Cancer Research. And I always worry about this cancer and links to these high-up people in these administrations. His other son, Robert, is a litigator at Texaco's lead law firm. In the Pennzoil case, he was involved in that. In 1950, Rifkin, it's saying, he resigned and joined Paul Weiss' firm, then a fledgling concern with virtually no litigation practice. And Rifkin was a federal judge and earned $15,000 a year. And in 1950, joined this other firm. And in 1950, as I say, from 47 on, we were heavily into mind control. And in 53, there was the murder of the president, that movie. And this article says Simon Rifkin brought a libel action against Walter Winchell for branding New York Post editor James Wessler a communist. And he also represented Madam Chiang Kai-shek, the wife of the Chinese nationalist leader. Well, Madam Chiang is also the wife of the great drug dealer Chiang Kai-shek of the Kuomintang. He was also known, his best known private practice, as the attorney for Jacqueline Kennedy and for her lawyer in an effort to have portions deleted from William Manchester's book about her husband and President John Kennedy. As a matter of fact, this summer, Caroline Kennedy, who just graduated from Columbia Law School last week, was doing apprentice work in the office of Arthur Lyman. And this company represented Jacqueline Onassis, Jacqueline Kennedy then, from stopping Manchester putting things in his book. Manchester was working hard on the book on the murder of Kennedy. And then he, I understand, had a nervous breakdown and was forced to go into a mental hospital. When he came out, the book, of course, ended up being a Lee Harvey Oswald did it alone. And Rifkin worked and represented Jacqueline Kennedy, and that was interesting considering he also represented Chiang Kai-shek. So Rifkin was against Walter Winchell. He was for Madam Chiang Kai-shek. He represented Jacqueline Kennedy against William Manchester. He also represented Adlai Stevenson, a presidential candidate who died and was poisoned before he ever got any nomination. And he was representing Justice Goldberg, who resigned so Nixon could stack the Supreme Court with his own particular fascist. And he hired Ramsey Clark, who said there was no conspiracy in the case to kill Martin Luther King. And his law firm also hired Ted Sorensen, who said that it's time to do away with the Constitution and have one election with a president in 6 years. And his office has Arthur Lyman, who represented the House Intelligence, Senate Intelligence, for the dismal display that they did. And they also represent Robert Vesco, the partner and client of Willard Zucker over in Switzerland. That is the source of money for the enterprise. So these people weave in and out, working together through the years. And I may get back later some more Manchurian Candidate. It's a very, very interesting movie. I recommend you see it, and I'm going to try and get the paper back this week, but I think I've given you a lot to think about, and I see Sinatra's role with the introduction of these ladies as being something sinister, going from heavy mafia connections to entrap and get rid of the two Kennedys and then join Agnew and Nixon and Reagan, where he really belongs as the corporate head of the corporation representing the mafia interest. This is Mae Bressel, and I'll be back with you next week. Thank you for the articles you're sending in books, and keep up clipping for me. I appreciate it very much.